project. And it's really a statistical concept, which I very little, which you can't translate into human beings. And it comes out of the Keynesian approach that you just move statistics around, the economy is doing well, and that sort of thing. I think this is a basic mistake in how our whole society is being run today. There are too many people running it by computers and statistics, and not enough sense of trying to break down in terms of the impact on people, and trying to take a part of the problem and do something about that, and a part of the problem and do something about that. You see, I think it's a great mistake to think that welfare is one problem. It's actually a number of different problems, and you can't deal with it just by, looking for even things where you have to give people money and this will solve everything. Well, money is a very dangerous tool. You see, money fights government. This is what I learned during World War II when I worked with a group during World War II. And the whole problem is the more money you pumped out, the harder it got to mobilize your resources for the purposes that you had. So you had to control it. Money gives people choices, more choices than they had. All right, this is fine, but how much choice do you want people to have? And still have a manageable government. So this notion that all you do is just give people money and then they're going to do what they please with it, they always want more. You never satisfy them. And there's a question whether you do it, and again, then inflation becomes the way you cheaper everybody's, and then everybody has a grievance. And there are these. Now, in the thing about the welfare thing is, I don't think it's a single problem. And I don't buy this notion that you put a label on it and that makes it a problem. You put welfare and say this is a problem, and it's actually how many different problems there are underneath it. And I think it would make more realistic and more effective handling to deal with it as not as a single problem to be disposed of with a single monetary grant. Simplicity and the advantage of that. But on the other hand, you'd be amazed how many people tell you that they know all sorts of people who are not on the welfare rolls. You should not be on the welfare rolls. Withdrawing doubles, at your names and so on and so forth. And on that,
What is the situation, what in terms of the defense foreign policy? I noticed that. Why why would the country react as they did after having been in this, what is a terribly miserable, difficult war, which nobody wanted, and where so many people complaining this and that and the other thing, and so forth. That's what's the reason for that return. The country right at the present time, for example, and here, and I'm not referring simply to approval of policy in Vietnam, that of course is a question that is too general, because they may approve getting out or getting in, bombing or not bombing, whatever they can. But I'm referring now to such specific questions as to who favored what is basically, and these are when you have a choice between what is basically a hard line and a soft line situations about honor hate would be different now than it was 6 months ago. And they it's a breaking point.
Well, I would say I'm quite bothered with hard line and soft line distinction.
I prefer the fact that the use of the hard line.
I'm just trying to give you a straight answer. And those words are not quite accurate. There is an atmosphere in it. But see, the feeling about Vietnam in this country for some time, and I did some pieces on this, and I suppose I charted this feeling more accurately than anybody else, because the great surge to get out of the war came in the summer of 71, where even people were so-called hawks who were talking about buying the debt. And this was tied in large is going sour and nothing is going to be done about it. See, there's a lot of you can't, no issue stands alone. You have to see the relationship. And then after the wage price freeze, and the main effect of that was that they thought that you were alive, just like they thought about Eisenhower. What's this man doing in the White House? He's doing the damn thing. And what well, maybe it's right or wrong, but at least he's doing something. And it wasn't the act, you know, the specific action so much as the fact that action was taken. And I have already started asking, and I've been interviewing through that summer, and I never wrote these two because at that point I came down with a hernia. And my doctor was supposed to take two hernias out of it, took one, and I had to go back to the second one. But at that time, I did talk to, I guess it was Bob Fitch in the summer. I said, everything's falling pieces of the present, but then, on the Vietnam thing, people's attitudes started to change as the economy started. And about January or February, I forget now when it is, I ran a piece in the Star, my first piece that I ran, saying that the American people were getting ready to stay in Vietnam. Somebody from your office called me and said, we don't get this, how do you explain it? And I said, I don't explain anybody what I get. This is what I said. This is what I'm saying, and this is what I think is happening. And that's all. And the movement had started then on that basis.
It was January, wasn't it?
Well, it was sometime. I got
January.
And I made this point definitely that they were getting ready. See, there's a way of the interviewer of learning what people are getting ready to do before they do it. And my readings indicated that they were getting ready, more of them, you see, that they were getting, and they were still, you know, not dominant factor. And of course when the South Vietnamese started their offensive, and this I wrote in my first series, from this campaign, there was this reaction of great humiliation and a feeling that we ought to hit back. But for years now, people have been saying, why don't we go in there and finish the job? So, and this has come, you see that has always been, this hawk and dove division has never been quite accurate, because there have been a great many people who have felt the way to get out of the war is to blast the hell out of it and get out.
Yeah.
And then other people have felt the way to get out of the war is to pull out.
Right.
And these people, I remember when McCarthy ran up in New Hampshire, somebody analyzed the results and said that people there didn't know what they were doing because there were hawks who loved for McCarthy. People had just, all they wanted to do was to get out. And they didn't care whether you got out by blasting the place or whether you got out by coming, by pulling out. To them, Vietnam wasn't important either way. So there's always been this feeling in the country that strong action might get us out or pulling out, you see. And the thing, and if you remember back in the Korean picture, this is actually what happened in the Korean attrition. The people, when Eisenhower was running in 52, people just said, well, let's go all out or get out, one or the other. And they didn't almost, when they voted for Eisenhower, they didn't almost care which one you did. But in their minds, they wanted to end, they wanted to end this. So this isn't, and this feeling has always been there. I use the phrase in my book, I get plugged for, you know, the Christ Marathon, saying, we were poor bird watching, you see. It wasn't a dove or a hawk. This thing was an albatross. Everybody just wanted to get rid of it. And thing. Now, I am interviewing to see what the reaction is now to a possible ceasefire. And I don't know what that reaction
is. Yep, no, no.
And,
you indicated your article.
It could cause you trouble.
Yeah.
It could cause you trouble. Does it cause
you trouble? If it came out between now.
Well, when I wrote, you see, in one of my series of pieces.
Before the election.
In one of the series of pieces that I did, I think it was the third, where I wrote, at that time it sounded, I know the star looked at it and said, what did you say? And I said that I thought you, the voters had given you, were ready to give you a free hand and in Vietnam for the election. And I didn't qualify it, and I gave the reasons why. And it was dependent and it reflected the reaction to the bombing, you know, step up and bombing. But more than that, it was really the key thing was the fact that after mining the harbors, the Russians did not react.
Sure, that we went to Russia.
Yeah. And this made, now, what this did, though, at the time was it also left a feeling that there was going to be a quick end.
That hasn't come yet.
And this hasn't come.
Although it says it's a critical part.
Well, and at that point, when I raised this, you know, and then speculated at the end of the piece, I don't remember how, but it seemed to me, I said, what could change this? And I said that one was a possible ceasefire could change it. The other was that it would just drag along and on an attrition basis. And I don't, I would not say automatically say that what the effect would be at this point, because I know what, you know, what the effects have been. I know enough about the attitudes to not, I would not make a judgment on it, so it could have, I can see where it could have different effects, and since I'm not writing tomorrow, I'll go out before anything.
You just put it as a ceasefire. Doesn't it make an awful lot of difference what conditions the ceasefire is under?
Sure.
Well, what you get for it.
Well.
Or what you give for it.
Well, it all depends. And this is one of the problems of interviewing on the subject of this thought. You can't give people a laundry list of alternatives because they don't think of those alternatives. You've got to work it out and sort of see how they would feel, and then you base this on their background.
I would think certainly it would seem to me troops.
Well, there was forgotten in the sense that it ended the siege.
It went on and on and on. But what I had is a ceasefire, not accompanied by a return of POWs and some understanding as to, and not accompanied by a disintegration of South Vietnam. If you had either, if you had a failure to get the POWs and failure of South Vietnam to survive, certainly in a reasonable time, a chance to survive, ceasefire might be dynamite. Now, I say dynamite probably from the standpoint of the national security is wrong, too. We can't do it on either basis. That's one of the reasons why, you know, when Schuman was here the other day, the French foreign minister, they're always, of course, attempting for the South of the North Vietnamese lines. Is there some chance for
somebody from the French agency called me up and I wrote that piece and said, how do you do your survey?
They need them. But anyway, they have a, said,
has been simply reduction of the craft. and so on. And so this has been a major factor. And but in the and I would guess you also very tricky to talk about the young generation. They represent several levels of feeling.
I happen to believe that their main concerns, and I think this is one of the governors that had lacked in them, is the main concern of the economy.
See, they're out
for jobs.
I've used the phrase, and I definitely use it, they're the entry generation. They're the entry generation.
Oh, yeah.
The problem they pose really is how do they get into society, and the jobs are just not there for them. They have some of them, but they're not there for enough of them. And it's not. And the war is a factor in there which keeps them in, because it also holds resources which a lot of it should be applied to making jobs here at home. And I think that this is really, I don't think that the question is, as far as the black violence, I think that passed off relatively quickly. And as a matter of fact, I think there's a sense in the country, in 68 people were still worried that might be a repetition of violence. Now, I think people feel that they can push the blacks down. The blacks won't fight back. This is my sense of how people feel. They're not afraid, and this is a change. You know, one of the curious things about this country, the one thing we don't know how to do is to practice restraint on a sustained basis. We always feel that we each of us should have a free run for himself until somebody stops us. We don't want to stop ourselves. And this is a great, it's been a source of strength in American character. It's also turned, I think, a great weakness, because we're going to have to learn self-restraint. And yet, the general feeling has always been that you push, and the other fellow can push. At some point, you push each other in the corner, and then you say, "All right, let's get out of the corner." But this is—it's also that people would prefer to have a crap game in which to divide who gets what and to do it reasonably. And there's some. This is that gambling streak there in the American people, and it shows up. And so, if you push back, because if the blacks, if they push for their rights, then whites get mad. If the blacks stop pushing, then the whites forget about it. And there isn't any real balancing. And this is, as I sense it, one of the great problems that we're building up for ourselves is we're losing the sense that we never had much self-restraint, and we're losing institutional restraints. And the question is, where is the restraint going to come from? Who's going to restrain us?
Yeah, the institutional restraints. Church, school,
family. Well, you take out, this I'm not being personal, I'm saying the same, but you take out campaigns are run. Anything goes. Everybody thinks that the other fellow is going to do the same thing. And nobody feels that there's a certain thing they shouldn't do. If they don't do something, it's because they haven't thought about it. They just go ahead and do it. And much of this is unnecessary, and it doesn't even make any difference. And yet they do it. And I look at it, and I watch this process, and I watch it, and I realize it. Most of what has been done doesn't change the votes.
Most campaigning does not change the votes.
And it has an effect holding your pause. It has an effect, but I think that
oh, so.
look, if you just said that everybody, whatever they raise, give half of it back, it would be fine. It wouldn't make any difference in the accuracy. And I think that in this little funny piece I said, by this time, the public is going to have headaches trying to figure out how to spend this money without losing votes.
It could be done. 68, for example, we have a lousy commercials program. We spend too much on television.
You can't spend that money that much efficiently. Nobody knows how to spend that much money efficiently. We don't do it when you buy weapons. We don't do it with armament. We don't do this. Well, anyway, this is, if you ask my concern about this, is looking ahead, is where do these restraints come in? And because I see, you see that, and this is, again, the New Deal Coalition had a curate built into it, had certain restraints and relied heavily on the use of them. And in that common binding use of government held down racial tensions and held down in many cases. And it also held down religious prejudice because this was the nature of the elements that Roosevelt brought together, and it was a great unifying force at that time, and it carried us through World War II.
Through the Depression.
Yeah, and it was. Now the question comes up, at least as I see it, that there's a lot of creating, and I've used the phrase, but, and I often call it selfish individualism, self-centered individualism, I change it around, but basically it's every man for himself. And there's more of it now than there was some years ago. Part of it is a result of continued inflation, which forces everybody to try to pass off something on to something else. But it's there, and it's getting stronger, as far as I can tell. And this is a, I don't know whether you can build a sustained society without government. So you can't just be anti-government and have society. You know enough about my rights and all. I'm not a socialist that government should do everything. I've never bought the notion, even on a racial thing. I've written and said that the integration efforts would not succeed, because I talked to about Southerners, and I'm ready to accept any voluntary program that any Southerner wanted to do. If you want to take 5 years to do it, I proposed this in my book on white and black some years ago. When the civil rights thing was at the peak, I said I would take a voluntary program, because if they will do anything voluntarily, let them do it. I'm satisfied as long as they just get started and find the world doesn't come to an end when they sit next to a black person and that sort of thing. Well, you're now getting another push and in another direction, but it's kind of on the racial side. It's very difficult to see. There are certain things that people want to push out and try to push it out of politics and push it out of reach of politics. And at the present point, there is no countervailing force to. See, we have a society which is largely an arena that people come and fight for their own interests. We believe in freedom. But this can get pushed too fast or too far, and then you get another big, then you have problems, and which will come up. I don't buy these surveys to indicate that there are more racial, in a sense, intolerance, because they ask the question, would you be willing to have yes, because they have rigged it, so there isn't any chance of one moving next door. So they give you the answer.
Who's going to say it?
And
you'd be willing to have a black president, and they'll say yes, or vice
versa. Well, actually, you know, you see this.
Even on that, though, a lot of them do a lot.
Well, this you would count, but the thing is that they have now set up the suburban migration to reach the point, you see, where the only kind of black migration that's possible is on a small basis, and many of them say and announce this as evidence that they have converted themselves, you see, and are now very pro-political, because they know they're not going to be too at one warm, I think I did, sorry, so people in Warren, Michigan, were saying, oh, yeah, we've got one black family in a whole suburb, this whole area.
So it's like somebody in Bel Air saying, it might be a hard one next to you, and you say yes. You know, that'd be the only one in the neighborhood, quite pleasant.
And so I don't, this is, again, this may have been an index of some kind of racial feeling some years ago, but it no longer has the same context. And so I'm kind of concerned about how far a lot of these things have been pushed. And my interviewing does not indicate, I think my interview, you see, but this is the nature of people. If they think they can get, they don't really know whether they're going to, there's still a lot of questions. Stop busing them out. They write this up and they say, well, he's talking about it. How do you know? If they have a choice, they might not stick with it. But at this point, they don't have a choice. But they are trying to use their power before the vote to commit the politicians as much as they can. None of the people aren't, you know, the picture that your media represents and so on, you ask why. Stupid. And they think that all they do is manipulate, is being manipulated, and they don't understand that people are alert to their own interests. They don't follow everything. And there are a lot of things they don't care about. And but when their own interests are affected, they are very alive to them. And on the other hand, there are many issues now at this point which affect their lives very intimately. And this is why you get a very excited an electorate that is, it has views on many issues, not on one. Back in 1952, when I was running, it was a simple election. You had a choice of the Depression and the Korean War. And it was very simple.
That's right.
Now there are great, the whole economic issues. There isn't any one economic issue. It's now become a bundle of issues, you see. And there's different things and different people, and they're trying to, and they still are given the choice of two candidates. And they got to deposit their votes in front of one or the other. And yet, so naturally they have misgivings about both candidates, and but they have to make a choice, and this is a problem for the reporting it is to understand that they feel they have to make a choice and how they make it. But they don't make it on the basis of what they read, and that sort of thing. They make it on the basis of impact of their lives and everything. I would guess the actions that the president or anybody in office takes that has a direct impact
agree that this that the kind of the type of polling, which is sort of like they ask these questions, anything you support this or that, it doesn't stop that tenor. It's really, you've got to do, I think, you've got to find out what life is making, who answered correctly, you've got to answer a series of questions here. And of course, there's so many people in the polling business now who do it with their ass in first days. All they do are computers. What's the model of precinct? Very few of them think. Close enough, and he said, it's better than that. Thank you. Well, second question. You get that free too?
You've done all you need to. probably did need to do once before the election.
I think so.
So it was probably, yeah, once a month. It probably had to be done, but it was at least certainly valuable to do. I don't think you need any more. Now the question is, do we gain enough from doing another one to make it worth the effort? Yes, maybe we do.
How do you do any better? One thing I was thinking of, we might do the one subject, but I might just have something down on it, like when we get the wrap up the security conference or something else, you say.
Yeah, we're
at that. I called you in every day to talk only about one subject because of the support of the security, and I take all the questions you want.
Do it the day after you announce it, so you get another bounce.
Maybe, of course, then there isn't much to say about it. I'm almost inclined to think that they are trying to skirt.
It doesn't matter whether there's anything to say about it.
Huh?
It doesn't matter whether there's anything to say about it. Nobody reads what's said anyway.
I don't know, I guess you're right. This one was good to do today. I have a feeling, the right feeling about it. It's good to do it because the sun's bitches.
I think that's
read about it, the editors and all the rest. They wanted to see the price.
Well, the big headline now is Nixon to address Nation Saturday on taxes.
I hope they don't think we're going to make the tax proposal now, but it is a headline. Well, that should be heard on the stage.
He's not registered to vote as president.
But I see General Morrison.
Registering to vote on October 5th.
I think the 6th is the deadline. Take rather remarkable distinction from Lawrence.